You're listening to Pastor Talk.
When you look at anyone younger than the boomer generation as a generalization, and so you're looking at Gen X, millennials, and even Gen Z or whatever that they will be called, mm-hmm. you're looking at a generation that is not that excited about the big gathering, the big place.
Okay.
And so whether a church is declining, which many of them are, and the worship center and other space seems vacuous, or whether or not people do not want to come to a singular large service, both of those are impacting facilities, and many churches are looking around saying, oh my gosh, we got so much facilities to support, and we don't have many people coming to those at any one time anyway. That's the sociological reality.
Welcome to Pastor Talk, the podcast of Lifeway Pastors, giving you the tools and encouragement you need to shepherd your flock well. I'm your host, Marty Duren. My guest today on Pastor Talk is Dr. Tom S. Rayner. Dr. Rayner is the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources in Nashville, Tennessee, editor of TomRayner.com, host of Rayner on Leadership podcast, and the author of numerous books, many of them bestsellers. I'm thankful to have Dr. Rayner on the podcast today. It is my great privilege to welcome to Pastor Talk today Dr. Tom Rayner, the president and CEO of this company called Lifeway Christian Resources in Nashville. Welcome, Dr. Rayner.
Marty, this is kind of cool. You know that? It's that this podcast is just really, really taking off. And I've been watching some of the metrics and listening to some of the stuff you're doing. And, you know, I feel like this inferior being sitting here and... Gosh, just watching all this stuff take off. You've done a great job with it, and the entire team has done a great job.
So thanks
so
much.
I'm glad to be here.
I just noticed you just released podcast number 300 and a lot, like 40-something. Is that right?
I don't know.
It seems like it was a very high number. I was very impressed when I saw it, to be honest with you.
Just impressed because we've talked a lot. And it's actually more than that because Jonathan, the host of that, does not hit the record button from time to time.
That's true.
And so... You'll see him hitting his ball head, and his, what Jonathan? I don't know what's wrong with this machine. Oh, Jonathan, you've got to hit the record button. So are they? Do they have the record button on?
Yes. Drew never forgets.
Good.
He never forgets. So there are no lost episodes of Rayner on Leadership because they weren't recorded to be lost.
That is correct. It's all in our memories.
Well, for those of you who are listening to Pastor Talk, most of you recognize Dr. Rayner's name. For those of you who don't. Before he came to Lifeway 7 or 8 years ago, he was already known in the world of church consulting, and the word expert does get thrown around a lot, but in the field of how do churches function, how does ministry operate, the systems related to church ministry, the practical side of things, it's really hard to find anybody who knows any more about it, who's studied any more about it, who's researched any more about it, than Dr. Tom Rayner. So what we're going to talk about today is the future of facilities related to church, the future of church facilities. And he did a podcast, I think, on Rayner on Leadership recently related to this.
Possibly.
And maybe it hasn't aired, or maybe it has. But you know a lot about it, and you've talked to a lot of people in a lot of different sized churches. So let's just kind of start with, what are some of the trends you're seeing, generally speaking, related to church facilities?
Let's do a sociological review, and that sounds very boring to your listeners, so I'll try to keep it a little bit lively. Let's look at what's happening to the American Mall.
Okay.
And if you just do an overall macro view of the American Mall, you're looking at stores that are entering. You're looking at malls that are highly vacant in terms of in the past. So what does that mean? For the most part, it means that the big anchors in the malls are no longer attracting the traffic that they used to, and thus the smaller stores that are supported by those anchors are fading away as well. My generation, the baby boomers, were the ones who were attracted to the destination site with the big anchor. They are no longer attracted, or let's say the large numbers are no longer attracted to that type of shopping experience. All right, transfer the sociological reality to churches. When you look at anyone younger than the boomer generation as a generalization, and so you're looking at Gen X, millennials, and even Gen Z or whatever that they will be called, you're looking at a generation that is not that excited about the big gathering, the big place.
Okay.
And so whether a church is declining, which many of them are, and the worship center and other space seems vacuous, or whether or not people do not want to come to a singular large service. Both of those are impacting facilities, and many churches are looking around saying, oh my gosh, we've got so much facilities to support, and we don't have many people coming to those at any one time anyway. Mm-hmm. That's the sociological reality. I do think that there's somewhat of theological underpinning in that the millennials, Gen X, and possibly Gen Z have this strong desire for biblical community, and they sense that it escapes in the large gathering. Now, the reality of it is it's hard to have community in a 200-attendant single service, but that is the perception that is out there. So they're both sociological and theological reasons that the service, the larger gathering, seems to be disappearing, and that's affecting facilities.
Here in the Nashville area, thinking about the mall, there's, as far as I can think, there's really three large malls. There's the one at Green Hills, there's the one at Cool Springs, and then out east is in Mount Juliet, I can't think of the name, Providence.
Okay.
The two in south of Nashville, so Green Hills and Cool Springs, are the traditional type enclosed malls.
Right.
The one at Providence is an open mall, so every store has its own entrance. The majority of growth in the Nashville area is in that direction,
yes,
that easterly direction. Is there a distinction in the sociological sense between the enclosed mall and the open mall, where you drive to every store and you don't walk around in a circle and hit all the food courts and all that kind of thing?
Probably. Okay. I'm not smart enough to know if there's a definite, but the enclosed mall gives the appearance that we're all here together.
Gotcha.
The open mall has a more of a boutique, individual sense to it. And so if we see the trends going in the direction we are, I think that that would be the reality, that they would be more inclined to go to the smaller store in the open than the enclosed mall.
In the States, of course, the big giant church that is comparable to the mall isn't the norm. There's a bunch of them, but it's not the majority. So there's a lot of smaller and medium church pastors who aren't dealing with having too much building.
Mm-hmm.
They're dealing with a steeple that's leaning to the left, or they're dealing with eaves that need to be painted that's going to cost a couple of $1,000s that they don't have. What are some of the issues that small and medium church pastors are seeing related to facilities that differ from what maybe a mega church pastor would deal with?
A lot of deferred maintenance would be one of the issues, and just the sense that they haven't taken care of the facilities, and now the bills are coming due, and they have to do something immediately. One of the suggestions that I make to these pastors, and I will go in and give a plug for one organization, because I think they do a good job of that, Cool Solutions, Tim Cool. They go into a facility, and yes, they will charge for going into a facility, but you end up saving so much more in any size church, because I say, this is what we see. Here's where there's wasted utilities. Here's where there's wasted space. And if you will do the following, you will have this type of stewardship, and you will have this type of savings. So deferred maintenance is just one of the big issues. Another one I would say is a relevancy of the type of facility. A lot of these churches have parlors that may be used once a month, once a year, twice a year. So there is unused space. A lot of these churches have space where they've become junk gathering. I often humorously talk about the upright piano that seems to be found in every room, and it becomes the disposal place. Hey, we're going to donate this to the church. Yeah, we're just,
it's like a fruitcake.
It is. It just never ends. So one of the issues is deferred maintenance. Another issue is just total irrelevancy. And a third issue that I would say is common in many of these facilities is they do not have a sufficient gatherings place for that which precedes the worship service, so a foyer or some place where really pre-community or community can take place. And so they're sacrificing that space for the larger worship center. And what a Tim Cool or someone does, goes in and says, let's flip-flop this a little bit, and let's look at it more efficiently. But those are the three major things: deferred maintenance, a sense that you have irrelevant facilities, and not enough gathering places. Because back in my day, as a 62-year-old, almost 62-year-old man, what I did when we went to church was we went straight right to the Sunday school room.
Right.
There was none of this coffee or anything. If we'd had coffee in church, someone would, you know, say that we're committing right next to the unpardonable sin because right. You may stain something.
The rapture's tomorrow if coffee's today.
Yep. So the gathering is important. So those are three major things that churches are looking at.
That's a great point, because if you think about the people dynamics, so the first church I pastored was in the country. There was no real foyer. You walked in, there was a bathroom on the left, classroom on the right, and the hallway, which would have been the foyer, was about 6 feet wide and about 8 feet long, and then you were in the auditorium.
Yep.
So people stood out under the pecan tree. That was the gathering place. So
any of them smoking?
The majority of them were smoking.
I imagine that was the case. In my first church, they were chewing. But
that's
they,
true. So there was always that gathering. So you had some out under the pecan tree. You had some that were outside on the front steps, and they would just talk until the service started. There wasn't a place for that to happen. So it wasn't a strategy of the church. It was the default of the way people behave.
Right.
So it sounds like you're saying to capture that default behavior by providing a place inside for people to gather in between or before or after that's a little more comfortable than having to stand out in the weather.
Yeah, there's always going to be the cost issue. I'm just imagining a pastor of a church running 150, 175 in worship saying, okay, that's great in theory, but we don't have the money to build a foyer. That's why I say, start looking at the types of people who can come in, like the Cool Solutions, and say, here's where you can stop spending here so you can spend more here. And I'll also give another shameless plug. This ministry does not exist yet, but it will in about, let's say about mid-fall would be my guess of 2017. It's called Envelope 3,
okay.
And it's Art Rayner, my middle son. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen anything he's put out there, he is finance, he's money, he's stewardship, and he has really developed something systemic for churches to help them understand. You've got envelope 1, which is facility expenditures, envelope 2, which is personnel expenditures, and there's not much left for envelope 3, mm-hmm. ministry. And so he's showing churches how to move funds to envelope 3 by spending less on 1 and 2. And by the way, we get back, so many shameless plugs, get back to Cool Solutions is one of those strategic partners he's mm-hmm. working with for the facility issue.
Well, if I had a name like Tim Cool, I'd have a cool something for a business, too.
Isn't that an incredible
Dude,
name?
I mean, you can't even order that up any better than that.
There you go.
Multi-purpose or dedicated facilities? How are people looking at buildings? Are people still building gyms to meet in for worship, or are they going back to a more traditional type of building?
I would still say that multi-purpose has a great great desire affinity on many of the churches, but not necessarily a gym,
mm-hmm.
but something that can be a large fellowship hall, that can also be a worship center, that can also be a recreation space, but not necessarily with basketball goals on it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm older than you are, so I remember when bowling alleys were in vogue.
Oh, wow.
And in some of the churches. And if you didn't have your bowling alley, then you were not a cool church.
That is amazing.
You don't need the basketball goal gym, but multi-purpose is still very much so. I'm talking to a pastor now that is looking at least plotting out the facility that his church plant will eventually build, and he right away is going multi-purpose. He wants a facility that is good stewardship at the onset. They may not play basketball in it, but it will be getting a lot of use in it.
That's awesome. What's the new normal for education space? Back in the day, the mistake was you built a huge auditorium and you never built enough Sunday school rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a problem from the get-go. Is there a new normal, or is it a balance? Are people moving away and going to more home-based groups?
There is a new normal, but there's two sides to the coin. The new normal, in a simple statement, is building less education space. So that's a new normal. But there's a reality because of money, stewardship, and sometimes zoning restrictions in mm-hmm. churches that will not allow you the big footprint to also add the education space. There's also the stewardship issue. If you build education space, are you utilizing it to the point that you say the expenditure, the stewardship is really worth it?
Right.
The answer is usually no. But there's a flip side to that. It is really a two-edged sword. The other side of it is, if you have an on-campus small group, the attendance rate is twice as high.
Wow.
As opposed to off-campus.
Right.
And the primary issue is child care.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're beginning to see the liability issue of off-campus child care. There are two churches in the Nashville area right now that are embroiled in messy lawsuits because of something that happened with a child in a home group.
Wow.
So I'm seeing some churches actually solve the problem in an intermediary type of way. They have limited education space, but the groups are meeting in that space during the week instead of the traditional Sunday school, Sunday morning time.
So that kind of keeps the child care locale then is still associated
you have the workers who are insured and covered and trained, and the liability then is taken taken away from the church.
That's interesting. Key indicators maybe with church planners, so they're meeting somewhere, buying, building, renting. What seems to be, is there a trend related to facilities and how church planners are moving, or are they still on that same path that we've seen for several years, where they start off in a rented space and then ultimately buy something?
Yeah, it's an expenditure issue, so it is going to be very unusual for a new church to be able to buy anything. Mm-hmm. So leasing, just from a simple how much cash do we have available perspective, will be where most of them will begin. How long you stay in a leasing facility is almost a geographic phenomenon right now. If you are in South Florida, you may stay in there indefinitely. Mm-hmm. If you're in parts of Southern California or the Northeast, you may stay in the lease facility indefinitely. Other than those places where large gathering purchase places are rare, you will see them transition within the first 10 years to a purchase facility. And basically it comes down to this, Marty. Many of these churches don't know what the owner of the facility will ultimately do.
Right.
And you can have the rug pulled out from under you. All of a sudden, we don't have a facility anymore. I know a church in the Nashville area that happened to 2 years ago. And they're in a lease facility. And all of a sudden, the lessor, the owner of the building, said, you can't meet here anymore. You got 6 weeks.
Whoa.
And because it was a month-to-month lease, you know, they were vulnerable to it.
Right.
So you either got to get in with some really tight long-term leases and protect yourself. But most of these, other than the locations I recently said, most of these churches eventually will build something, but they will build smaller. They will go after 8 acres of land instead of 80 acres of land. That will be the trend. That is the trend for right now.
Are there any, we're talking about facilities and some of the decisions that pastors and lead teams are going to have to make related to them. But what about the attitudes of church attenders? You know, there was a period of time where some church attenders viewed anything other than a traditional auditorium as a subpar meeting place for the people of God. Is that about the same, or is it still a blend? You've got some people who, if you don't have a chandelier and a piano and an organ, then you're not worshiping. Then other people are like, you know, give me a mountaintop and some clouds and a harp and I'm fine. I mean, is there a trend there?
I love those metaphors. It's generational. It's not totally generational. The builder generation, those born before 1946, will, as a rule, prefer the traditional, the older traditional. Really, once you get 1946 and younger, beginning with the boomer generation, then on to Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, there's less and less pushback. So the reality of it is the builder generation is going away. Mm-hmm. They're older. And so there is not much as demand that we must have the tall steeple and the chandelier and the organ and those type of things that were more associated with the traditional facility. It tends to be shifting significantly toward we're more open to the type of facility. It's more utilitarian, which I would say more of a good stewardship issue.
Right. So that probably addresses the chairs versus pews question too.
Maybe, maybe not. I'm not totally convinced.
Okay.
Most conventional wisdom says let's go with chairs. Because you can decide how much space you want in there. Mm-hmm. We would think that chairs would give us more space per width inch because people say, that's my designated chair, whereas in a pew, the conventional wisdom has been, I'm going to put my coat and my Bible next to me, and they're doing that with chairs too.
Right.
And so we're actually seeing some churches have more utilization of pew space in chair space, but I would not want them anchored. If I am a pastor and I have this vacant facility and I'm deciding right now, I go with chairs. Mm-hmm. And I go with the kind of chairs that can hook together. Those will have more of a pew type of feeling,
right,
but that can be removed at a moment's notice and rearranged at a moment's notice.
You remember, I don't know, 10 years ago, they had those shoes the kids were wearing that had the wheels built into the bottom of them?
I've seen them. I've always wanted them.
They could retract them. They rarely did, but they could. Anybody out there that works in the pew industry, if you could design a pew that had retractable wheels on the end where you could roll them from room to room, you might be able to sell a few of those things.
And I guess the best way for clarification is call it interlocking chairs that have the efficiency of pews, as opposed to the chairs that are just next to each other.
Right.
And some of those interlocking chairs have the appearance that they're almost one and the same.
Dr. Tom Rayner has been my guest on Pastor Talk, and we've been talking about the future of church facilities. I want to encourage you to listen to his podcast, Rayner on Leadership, which is available wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, and your favorite podcatcher, and check out his blog and other information at tomrayner.com. Dr. Rayner, thanks for being with us today.
Man, you're the rock star. I'm just glad to be a part of it.
I appreciate it. Pastor Talk is the podcast of Lifeway Pastors and is hosted by Marty Duran. That's me. Join us each week as I interview pastors, authors, professors, and others to help your ministry as you seek to shepherd your flock well. Until next time, this is Marty Durham.